Join us, won't you, for the University of Alaska Radio Forum. Each week at this time, a panel of experts discusses a topic of interest. Here with this week's panel and topic is your moderator, Jerry Reinwan, head of the University of Alaska's Journalism Department.
Our guest on today's University of Alaska Forum is one of Alaska's most respected citizens, State Senator John Buttrevich of Fairbanks. Senator Buttrevich is a lifelong Alaskan, and his lengthy political career has spanned over 25 years of public service. Senator Buttrevich served in the Territorial Senate from 1944 to 1958, and in the 3rd, 4th, 5th, and 6th legislatures. He ran unsuccessfully for the governor's chair in the first statehood election. John Buttrevich is the only man ever to be chosen chairman of the powerful Senate Finance Committee while the opposition party held control of the Senate. We've asked Senator Buttrevich to draw upon his vast reservoir of Alaskan experiences and to share some of them with us. During his 60 years in Alaska, John Buttrevich has witnessed many changes. One of the most interesting is in the field of transportation. He recalls that modes of Alaskan transportation in his childhood days were much different than those we now have.
Well, of course, I was born and raised here, and when I was a kid, everything was horse-drawn and dog teams, and some of the changes I saw. I took my first airplane ride in 1924 with Carl Ben Eielson, and I had my second ride with Noel Wien the same year. And so I knew the old Richardson Highway when we had horse-drawn stages running over the then Richardson Trail, as we called it. The only transportation was water and horse-drawn or dog teams. In fact, I had a friend I served with in the territorial legislature, and he told me when he first went to the territorial house, it took him 2.5 months to get from Nome to Juneau. So when people talk about moving the capital because it's hard to get to Juneau, they just, it's a matter of comparison. It used to take 2.5, 3 months sometimes. It took longer to get to the session than the session lasted.
During the 1940s and 1950s, significant political and social changes took place. Perhaps the one that pleases John Buttrevich most was the important political role the Alaska Native has played in the molding of the future of the 49th state.
When I was a youngster and when I first got into the legislature, we only had a few of our Native people who were engaged in the business of politics. William Paul was one of the old-timers who served before I did, and with distinction in those days. He was an attorney. He served in the House. And, of course, just about the time I started in the legislature, which was back in 1945, people like Frank Paradovich, Bill Belts, who were the 1-2 presidents of the Senate after statehood, began to emerge on the scene. And, of course, I've seen this the evolution of our Native people up to this point from their primitive state. And while people will say that all the Native is just the same as the white person, he has the same advantages and everything else, the brutal truth is we have mediocre white people in the legislature. But a Native, in order to serve in the legislature, has to be an outstanding Native. Now, I say that as a statement of fact, but actually that's my personal observation. I believe it's true.
Alaska has shaken the economic doldrums of pre-statehood days and has entered an era of unprecedented economic growth. Last year's whopping state budget, an all-time record, was over $300 million. However, multi-million dollar budgets are creatures of Alaska's recent prosperity. Senator Buttrevich remembers a day when the dollar was much tighter in Alaska.
The first budget I put together as chairman of finance was $11 million for 2 years. And actually, the first time I served on the finance committee, our budget was less than $6 million for 2 years. And the University of Alaska got $100,000 to run the university for 2 years. I mean, the changes have been dramatic, and we went from an age of gold mining into an age of oil and other things. Timber, our timber products are producing much in southeastern Alaska, in pulp mainly. But we are an oil state, we might as well face it, and we're an oil state in good financial condition. And I recollect one time when I appeared before President Eisenhower urging statehood, one of the things I said is that we who understand conditions in Alaska are sure we can work out our own social and economic destiny. And I haven't changed my mind, and I think that the conditions today prove that.
Prior to the Swanson River and Cook Inlet oil discoveries, a large portion of Alaska's income came from her fishing industry. The vast numbers of Pacific salmon that return annually to Alaska's myriad freshwater streams form the basis of one of her earliest industries. This important industry, which employs many Alaskans, is of great concern to John Butrovich. He is worried about the bleak future facing Alaska's fishermen.
The fishing industry is a sick industry. The history of our main pack in the early days, which was, of course, salmon, was a sorry story. Starting in about 1905, our salmon catch was valued anywhere from $60 to $200 million. And that money, the fishing was done promiscuously by the big interests who furnished their own boats, their own labor and everything, harvested the crop, took it to Seattle, labeled the cans, sold it in the South 48, and returned nothing in the way of taxes to help rehabilitate the salmon runs. And this condition existed long after I was in the legislature. And, of course, today we have more gear fishing the same water for fewer fish, and it just can't be. Our problem now is too much gear concentrated almost boat to boat, gear to gear, and maybe fishing for 3 or 4 hours at a time, and maybe at the end of the season a total fishing time of 3 days. It isn't in the cards anymore. This year we had a pretty good run in Bristol Bay, for example. Only a few of the canneries were opened, and some of the fish were actually dumped overboard. It's a problem we've had ever since I've been in the legislature, and I wish I knew the answer to it. It's a tough one. It's a tough one because of the 3-mile limit. It's a tough one because of international relations with Canada, Japan, and Russia. And they fish the high seas. We don't. Our fishermen say that they take small fish that never get into our waters. And it's just an endless controversy.
The statehood movement has gone into the history books as one of Alaska's most emotion-charged and controversial chapters. John Butrovich recalls his feelings about the statehood movement.
I think I perhaps was one of the first Republicans to make a fuss about statehood. I was for statehood from the time I became interested in politics. And my only concern in the early days was, can we shoulder the responsibility, the financial responsibilities of statehood? But long before we achieved statehood, I had taken a firm stand and was convinced that regardless whether you called it a state or a territory, we could work out our own destiny. And, of course, in 1954, I was the spokesman for Operation Statehood when we went back to Washington at our own expense and our own time to plug for statehood for Alaska.
Statehood meant many things to many Alaskans. The reasons for becoming a state were as varied as the terrain of the great land, and yet for John Butrovich, statehood meant something very simple and fundamental, a chance to have his voice heard through the power of the ballot.
Well, first and foremost, I was born here, and conceivably, I could have lived my entire life under the American flag and never been able to vote for President of the United States. As a legislator, I would serve in the legislature under a governor appointed by the President of the United States, who could be a resident of Arkansas or New York State or someplace else, and actually whose only power practically was the veto power. It brings up that old saying that we were second-rate Americans in Alaska. We had all the disadvantages, including federal income tax, but we had very few advantages, and the advantages that we had were ladled out to us on a spoon. And there are some people who object to that. I'm one of those. I feel that we should decide what we want. And we should participate in federal aid, but the federal people shouldn't come in and treat us like peons, and actually that's the way it used to be. Our road appropriations came from Washington, and they told us what to do with them. It was the old Alaska Road Commission, federally operated. The state had very little control. We couldn't do really an awful lot as a territory.
The recent upwelling of concern about our environment has spread across the nation and has placed Alaska in the limelight of the conservation movement. With increased development of Alaska's resources has come an increased concern that the 49th state will soon go the route of so many industrialized states of the lower 48. Conservationists fear that industrial development and increased population will turn Alaska from the great land into the gutted land. Senator Butrevich agrees that this is a real problem, but he hopes Alaskans will be wise enough to prevent it.
That could happen. It's up to us, I think. It's up to us. We the people. We have to decide where we're going and how we're going. And I think there's a place for multiple use. I think I'm to the right of the conservationists. I'm someplace between a conservationist and a preservationist. I've lived here all my life, and I have a proprietary interest, or I think I have, in the state, and I hate to see anything spoiled. I hate to see our country torn up, and I hate to see our game and our fishes depleted. And sure, I'd if I had my way and lived in Alaska all by myself, I wouldn't disturb a blade of grass. But I know that that's impractical and can't be, and so we have to have both. We have to have sensible progress and still take care of the things that are unique to Alaska. This is a big piece of real estate with a lot of natural beauty and a lot of the things. Now, I was born here. I don't know any better, but I know a lot of the new people who are here came here because they couldn't stand it where they were, and they hate to see it get like it was where they came from. And I sympathize with them because I feel the same way. But I do know that we have to have development because someone has to pay the bill. And we have our kids and the future to think of. We need all of these social and economic things, and someone has to pay for them. And we're in a beautiful position to do it.
The big oil strike at Prudhoe Bay has placed Alaska among the ranks of the elite oil-rich states. Billions of barrels of oil await removal from the frigid Arctic region. Many Alaskans hope that we can cash in on this precious resource and put the state on firm financial ground for many years to come. John Butrevich believes this can be done.
And I think that with our newest resource, our oil resource, I want the oil companies to remove the resource, but I want them to pay a just tax. To me, it's a privilege to remove that oil, and it's a privilege tax as far as I'm concerned. They call it a severance tax. It's a privilege tax, and they're big, and they can extract this resource, but they've got to leave something for the people that the resource belongs to. It's just that simple.
During the last legislative session, Alaska's lawmakers wrestled with the difficult problem of raising the severance tax. Even before the session began, most legislators agreed that the state must raise its severance tax to a level that would be fair to Alaska and to the oil industry. In effect, the legislature was working on a tax which could ultimately mean billions of dollars to the 49th state. After much debate and compromise, the House and Senate passed a sliding scale severance tax. I asked Senator Butrevich if he thought this new tax was equitable for both the state and the oil industry.
Yes, it was. It was a fair tax. It was not the tax that I had originally put in. You see, way back in 1955, in territorial days, a lady by the name of Irene Ryan, who was in the House of Representatives, introduced a 1 cent severance tax on oil. And, of course, we didn't have any at the time, and there were people who questioned her, you know what. They thought that she was a little previous, and I might have been inclined to think that way also, but as time proved, she was just farsighted, because until the flood in 1967, that 1 cent a barrel was the only that that was the only severance tax we had. That 1% severance tax was the only severance tax we had. And then after, when we went down following the Fairbanks flood, after a terrible fight, we succeeded in getting another cent on, which they called a disaster tax. And then, of course, in the 68 session, I introduced my 2-cent severance tax, which had been defeated in 67, 2%, and it passed. So that made a 4% tax. And then I introduced an additional 2 cents in 1969, and it didn't pass, and it was held over and was supposed to have been passed in 70. Well, they took the bill in 70, and because of the fact that the North Slope was not in production, they came up with this sliding scale, which actually, in effect, doesn't tax some of the producing wells if they get down below a certain production. And I think it's all right because it will permit the oil companies to extract as much oil as they can from a well rather than abandoning the well. And we'll still get our 12.5% royalty. Whereas if they walked away from it because of too much tax, we'd lose the 12.5% royalty. So they kind of had us there. And that's why we came up with this sliding scale. It was not my child. Actually, I would have settled for another 2%. But from a fair standpoint, and particularly in the inlet area where some of the wells are getting now marginal, I think it probably was better for the companies and better for the state. And the state is where my concern is.
During the last primary election race, John Brutrovich supported Lieutenant Governor candidate Brad Phillips over incumbent Robert Ward. I asked him why he supported his Senate colleague Brad Phillips.
Well, one reason was in 1958, when I ran for governor of Alaska in the first state election, a gentleman from Anchorage had agreed to file for Secretary of State, and then at the last minute he tore up his filing. The Republicans in Anchorage got into rhubarb, and he tore up his filing, and I was left without a candidate and or a running mate. So I went down to Anchorage, and I met this young chap, Brad Phillips. I hadn't known him, and told him the simple facts of life, that we probably wouldn't make it, but I might lose something by running, but all he could do was gain because he was going to get some exposure, and if he was politically inclined, it might be a good thing for him. And he agreed to run with me, and he did run, and he ran hard. And then, of course, he served 10 years in the Alaska Senate. He went in 2 years before I did in the state Senate. Served 10 years. He was president of the Senate. He succeeded me. He was president in 69 and 70. He did a creditable job. And when he filed for Secretary of State, I didn't feel I had any choice, really. And I supported him. I felt that he could do the job. I recognize that Bob Ward, the incumbent, would be a formidable opponent and a good one, an intelligent man and a capable man. And I could say nothing bad about Bob Ward in the primary, and I did not. I just plugged for my friend Brad, and he did carry Fairbanks, but he didn't carry anywhere else.
Senator Brutrovich's support of Brad Phillips undoubtedly raised some eyebrows among the ranks of Republican Party faithfuls in Alaska. I asked him if his fellow party members expressed any displeasure about this move.
They probably thought a lot of things about me, but they didn't say them.
One of the most controversial bills to be passed by the last legislature was the one that hiked the pay of Alaska's lawmakers from $6,000 to $9,000, and which increased expense allowances from $1,000 to $4,000. Alaska's most influential newspaper, the Anchorage Daily Times, blasted this legislative pay raise in several editorials, labeling it, quote, a grand scheme, a gutless move, a horrible program, close quote. Senator Brutrovich traced the legislative route of the bill and gave some of his ideas of what this pay raise would accomplish.
I wouldn't have introduced the bill that passed. In fact, I would not have introduced any salary bill. Our salary was $6,000 a year and $1,000 expense money, which I'm sure is not adequate. The bill that came over from the House to the Senate originally was a House bill, called for $12,000, a $12,000 salary, and $4,000 expense money. When that bill came to my committee, I inherited it after I took over the Finance Committee. We cut the bill to $9,000 and cut the expense money back to $1,000 and sent the bill back to the House, passed it through the Senate and sent it to the House. That would have been $9,000 salary, $1,000 expense, just like the expenses were. The House refused to concur in our amendments, and it went to a conference committee, and I refused to serve on the conference committee. I didn't want any part of it, and I did not serve. And the final bill, which was $9,000 and $4,000, is what emerged. Now, the question, whether it's who can say whether it's too much? I do know this. If you're in business, as I have been all the years that I've been in the legislature, it costs you money to serve in the legislature. But nobody forced me to serve or forced me to run. But I do think there is a segment of our people who could not afford, under the old salary scale, to file for office. I don't know very many people who are working today, working people, who could afford to leave their job, and they would most certainly have to leave their job and serve for $6,000 a year and $1,000 expense money. It simply isn't in the cards. So what do you get? You either get people who are willing to make the sacrifice and can afford the financial sacrifice, or you get semi-retired people who I don't think you want there in the first place. And so I feel that this will enable more people. Now, I don't say the caliber will be any better. They say, well, if you pay a higher salary, you'll get better people. What I think it does with a salary of $9,000 and $4,000 expense money, I know a lot of people that are not making more than that who might just want to run for the legislature and participate. And I think everybody should be able to participate. I think it's ridiculous where we're going now. The cost of campaigning is so ridiculous that it's something has to be done. And I know the president vetoed a bill just recently restricting the amount of money to be spent in campaigns, but some of the candidates now are spending $20,000-$25,000 for a seat in the legislature. Well, obviously, you either have to be wealthy or you have to be financed by somebody who's going to influence you later, or you couldn't do this. And I don't think that's healthy for the state.
Over the past 6 months, the native land claims issue has become the number one concern of most Alaskans. Most residents of the 49 states seem to want an equitable settlement arrived at as soon as possible. John Buttrovich echoes those same sentiments.
We do have valid native land claims, I believe, and there are people who might even argue that, but the treaty with Russia very definitely recognized that the inhabitants of the state of or the territory of Alaska, Indian Territory, before it was territory, had a valid claim, and that they would be recognized by the United States government. And of course, the Tlingit-Haida claims in southeastern were recognized and have been in the courts for years and years and years before the present controversy arose. I don't think that you're going to have true development in the state of Alaska until the matter is resolved one way or the other. Made, and I hope it's a just and honorable settlement. Unfortunately, the people who really were entitled to it are most of them dead now. It's their children and their grandchildren and their great-grandchildren who will reap some benefit from it. That's just one of the sad facts of life, that the people who were dispossessed will not themselves receive the settlement from the United States government. The whole history of the treatment of our Indian people by the United States government is a sad chapter in the history of the United States. In the South 48, with reservations, with the Bureau of Indian Affairs, they turned a proud people into vegetables. And God knows, I wouldn't, nor do I think most people would like to see any such thing as that happen in Alaska. I think they should be treated fair and honorably. I don't think that they should have special treatment. I think that they've got to stand up and be counted and treated exactly like we are. No more special privileges once we make a settlement. I think that's what they want. That's what I want.
State participation in a native land claim settlement has been a bone of contention among Alaska's political leaders. The land claims bill passed by the Senate calls for state participation by leveling a 2% royalty on mineral production. This will mean an ultimate payoff of $500 million to the natives from funds that would otherwise have ended up in the state's coffers. Governor Miller has taken a strong stand against any state participation in the land claim settlement, arguing that this is basically a federal problem and it therefore should be settled by the U.S. government. I asked Senator Buttigieg if he thought Governor Miller was on the right track in this state-federal struggle.
Frankly, I have to agree with him. Anything that the state did would be, in my opinion, strictly frosting on the cake. Now, if that's what it's going to take to settle the claim, sure. I wouldn't want to see the claims dragged for another 10 or 15 or 20 years with all the uncertainties that are created. But I frankly felt that it was a federal responsibility, that it was something that we recognized when we purchased Alaska from Russia. And it was something that the United States government fell down on and fell down horribly, in my opinion. And this is strictly a personal opinion. I think that most of the things that the United States government has done for our Native people have been a detriment and a hindrance rather than an aid.
Last spring, a Russian sea captain was seized off Kodiak Island for an oil spill caused by his vessel. Before the state could prosecute the Soviet seaman, the federal government scurried him out of the state after he had paid a $1,500 fine. This move incensed many Alaskans, since it smacked of federal interference in an area of state jurisdiction. Senator Buttigieg was among those that was upset by the federal action.
I think that the sovereignty of the state of Alaska rules when someone is arrested in Alaska waters. It's just that simple. I think it was a terrible thing to do. They whisked this guy away. They didn't want to have an international incident. But the facts of the matter are that these violations occur time after time with other international powers. And until we get a little tough about it, and we will be tough, our courts will be tough with them when they're picked up, why, they're going to continue to do it. There's no retardant. If something happens like when the feds stepped in and whisked this captain away before the state could serve papers on him. No, I think it was a sad deal.
The lure of the governor's chair drew John Buttigieg into the 1958 gubernatorial race against ever-popular Bill Egan. Mr. Egan won, but many political observers believe that Senator Buttigieg still has great statewide support and appeal. I asked him if he would consider another shot at the governor's job.
I might consider a shot at a statewide office, but whether or not the people would consider me as a serious candidate because of my age is something else again. I'm 60 years old, and, you know, this is a young, jumping country, and they might consider a man too old at 60 or 62 or 64. I don't know.
You've been listening to the University of Alaska Radio Forum. This program was produced in the studios of KUAC for the University of Alaska Broadcasting Service.